Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Devin.
And I almost tried to trick you again.
Really?
I was like, that would have been too soon.
Yeah.
Or maybe that would have been, like, funny because it was too soon. A lot was going through my mind as I was doing the lead-in. And I decided just to go with the regular I'm Sarah because that's who I am. Also, yeah. My Nazi fighting name is Sarah Lerner.
And my Nazi fighting name is still Devin Handy.
So how was your weekend, Devin?
It was really good. My son is on summer break from school now.
Yes. I feel like I haven't seen Hank in a while. And
yeah.
He still, when he saw me, he still remembered, like, oh, this bitch.
Yeah.
She takes my mom away from me. And I don't think I'm, like, feeling that.
Yeah,
like,
no.
You know, it's nothing personal, but I hate you.
But I hate, yeah, seriously.
So how was your weekend? Well, not as lovely, I think, as your weekend. It was kind of a Murphy's Law of Health weekend.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so some of my headaches have returned. So on Friday afternoon, I was feeling like, oh, gosh, like, headache coming back, gonna chill. And then Saturday, it was worse. But then also on Saturday night, Nick and I got food poisoning.
I know, Sarah texted me that, and I was like, oh, sad bitch.
But you know what's really weird? Yeah. Is that the food poisoning made my headaches feel better. I was joking with Nick. I was like, I think I've found the cure to my headaches.
Oh, no.
Food poisoning. Because I felt great,
yeah.
Headache-wise. Felt shitty everything else-wise. Also, I will say, if you're ever going to move in with a significant other, make sure you have more than one bathroom. Because when you get sick, there's lots of creative puking that one person has to do. And that person was me.
Creative puking is the name of my hipster band.
Yeah. That is the name of my memoir, Creative Puking. So it was just a very eventful health weekend. But now that I feel better from the food poisoning,
right.
My headaches have returned.
Of course.
So I'm like, I'm going to go see my doctor tomorrow. I have a check-in with my neurologist. And I'm going to be like, how do we reproduce the effects of food poisoning without food poisoning? Because I think that really helped my head. And I think I'm on to something here. So it was an interesting discovery. I'm just glad to not be creatively puking anymore, and I'm glad we can do this podcast, because I was like, when I was up all night, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to feel well enough, and I told Devin, you have to do everything. Like, the only thing I can do is show up.
Yep.
But I'm feeling better, so.
Yeah, I'm so glad.
After an eventful health weekend, I'm good.
Good.
I could eat some of the pastry that your husband got
for
me. That's a win. I count that as a win. Why don't we go through what we're going to discuss today?
Yes, let's do that. So, in our first block, we will be talking about listener feedback, as always. Block two is named Boy Bye. About Steve Bannon's departure from the White House.
Yes, and that happened on Friday, which feels like 84 years ago.
It does feel like 84. I know.
But we felt like it was important to talk.
So next, in block three, we have Trumpland bullshit, now with 100% more bullshit.
I like that you really jazzed that up.
Need a little zhuzh in our perma block.
Yes.
So we'll be talking about the dearth of Secret Service funds in Trump's presidency.
Uh-huh. There was a story that just came out from USA Today this morning.
Yeah.
And, basically, as people have pointed out on Twitter, Trump's presidency is running the Secret Service like he is his business.
Oh, absolutely.
Into the ground, yeah.
And then we're going to talk about the Trump administration rolling back an Obama-era contraception rule.
Yeah.
About how it's related to healthcare and your employer. And then we get into block four, our gratitude check, which is sorely needed. And then block five, because it is Monday, we're doing the dickwad of the week. And we have a couple of really awful dickwads for you.
Evergreen.
We always have a hard time, but we've got one dishonorable mention and one loser.
Mm-hmm.
And then block six, we have some action items. So things that you can do after you listen to the pod.
All right, Devin, so let's get into some listener feedback and then updates on our end. So what's the first thing we've got today?
So first up, listener Jane Elaine tweeted at us. She said, quote, "One reason I love Hellbent Pod and DeRay, they exhibit humility and always keep learning and leave room for others to learn too."
Man, I feel honored that we're mentioned in the same breath as DeRay.
I know.
Him and Pod Save the People is really awesome.
It is really great.
Yeah, he's really great. So thank you, Jane. That means a lot. It's just great feedback to hear, and You know, I think our drive to be self-critical is something that we truly do for ourselves.
Yes.
Like, we just feel like it's important. It is an important part of our, like, feminist journey, mm-hmm. and just, like, our personal journey, right. as people. So it's always great to hear that others feel inspired by that.
Agreed.
And then, so, at Lil Petty Crocker, which is a great...
Petty Crocker is
great,
so good.
A great Twitter name. So, yeah, speaking of critical feedback, yes. we've got a couple of critical yeah. feedback points today. So yes. we'll start with the first one. So she said, quote, listening to the pod and I'm a little disappointed in the lumping together of far-right nationalist groups. The rally was called, quote, Unite the Right for a reason, and it is important that we understand the differences between the over 40 groups there. In the same way that Democrats, Republicans, the left, and the right have an ideological spectrum, so do white nationalists. White nationalists have differing views on religion, anti-Semitism, homophobia, and outright displays white supremacy. So essentially, from what we understand, she took issue with us saying that the quote-unquote alt-right doesn't matter what you call it, they are Nazis. And I think that's a good point, that the alt-right encompasses many different factions right. of white supremacists, and not all of them are necessarily neo-Nazis.
Right.
So thank you for that thoughtful note and correction, Lil Petty Crocker.
So next we have Sarah from our Facebook group, and she said, quote, love Devin's gratitude check about the If It Happened Somewhere Else op-ed, but big wince at the beginning when you described it as the way we'd cover Charlottesville if it happened in another country, like Africa or China. Now, I know that you know that Africa is not a country and that it was just a slip of the tongue, but too often Africa is referred to and thought of as a single unit which erases and devalues the vast diversity of people, cultures, politics, and climates throughout the continent. And you are absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And thank you for pointing that out. I'm embarrassed that I didn't catch the slip.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
So that's on me too.
Yeah. And thank you for pointing it out. It won't happen again.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get on to some updates from our end. So we don't have a guest on Thursday because Devin is going to a podcast convention.
I am in sunny Anaheim.
Jazz hands. So she's going to geek out over things like audio equipment and RSS feed optimization.
That's true.
So, yeah, what is that? #ConLife?
#ConLife.
And so because of that, partially because of that, we're TBD if we're going to have a Thursday episode. Because also, like I sort of mentioned at the top of the show, I'm still dealing with headaches. So it's kind of going to be probably a game time decision. And we'll let you know if we're not going to have a podcast, we'll tweet it out. Okay, Devin, so let's get into our next block titled Boy Bye.
Boy Bye.
And that has to do with one Stephen Bannon. And I will just say right before we started this section, we took a break.
We did.
So we could watch the total eclipse
of the sun.
And we're calling it that because of the song.
Right. The Bonnie Tyler, 1980s classic, Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Yeah. And Devin and I definitely just grooved to that.
We did.
So that was a thing, but now we're back.
We're back.
Let's talk about, very serious. Let's talk about Steve Bannon because he was fucking ousted.
Ousted.
And it's unclear why or when it yeah. started this sort of...
Process,
this motion to get Steve Bannon started because there are differing stories.
Right. So he was officially out on Friday the 18th. Mm-hmm. So 84 years ago. And according to sources, his firing had been coming for weeks, although Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that the decision was ultimately mutual.
Yeah. So that's where the confusion comes in.
Yeah. I mean, but that's also what you tell your friends after your romantic partner unceremoniously dumps you.
Yeah.
So.
You're like, well, it was always going to happen.
Yeah. It was mutual.
It wasn't working. Yeah. I was going to break up with this person, but they broke up with me first.
Exactly.
So it's totally mutual.
So, I mean, let's take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah. You know, and I think a lot of people were happy that he was gone, mm-hmm. which I was among those people.
Yes.
But I think that we should also remember that while Bannon is a special class of dickwad, Trump is still surrounded by racist motherfuckers and a literal Nazi.
A literal registered Nazi.
And, you know, Trump himself is a racist motherfucker.
Exactly.
So Bannon leaving doesn't feel like it'll change the administration drastically.
Yeah.
I mean, we still have Jeff Sessions as Attorney General.
Right.
Like, not a whole lot, I think, will change. But I do think him being gone is good.
It's good. I mean, it's definitely not bad. Yeah. Senator Chris Murphy made a good point on Twitter. He said, quote, "Remember, Trump was hawking birtherism, the molding agent between racists and the legitimate political opposition to Obama, way before Bannon."
Yeah, I mean, and also way before he even ran for president, he was denying housing to minorities.
Exactly. And then Representative Al Green, very succinct, Bannon was a problem. Trump is the problem.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good way to put it.
The fish rots from the head.
Right.
And that's, like we were saying, you're seeing that play out in all aspects of his administration.
Right.
From the people who are literally in the White House with him, like Stephen Miller, like Seb Gorka, who, like Devin said, is a literal certified fucking Nazi.
Right.
Actual Nazi.
Right.
Like, legit, he is a Nazi.
Right.
And then, like, Jeff Sessions as Attorney General and all these other people. So, yeah. I think Representative Al Green is correct. Trump is the problem.
Is the problem, right.
So Bannon, he leaves just 7 months into the administration and less than a month after John Kelly took over as chief of staff. Although I will say 7 months is a long time
in the
Trump administration.
I was on Twitter. I can't remember, but it was he lasted 21 Scaramucci's.
Oh, God. 21 Scaramucci's.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, Melissa McEwen, who we had on the pod recently, she had a great thread on this, and she said, quote, "If indeed Steve Bannon is out at the White House, he's being fired, quote unquote, because his job is done. It's like Scaramucci. His job was over. It forced out Spicer and Priebus, who Trump wanted gone but didn't have the spine to fire himself. It only took Scaramucci 10 days. Bannon's job may have taken 211 days, or as Devin said, 21 Scaramucci's. but it's the same principle. Quote unquote, firing Bannon frees him up to run propaganda for Trump with the illusion of independence. It also helps create the illusion that Kelly's got a handle on things, thus implicitly promising yet another Trump quote unquote pivot that won't come. But one less Nazi in the White House."
Right.
Although I would probably say he's more of a white supremacist.
Right, right.
Asshole than Nazi, but unlike Seb Gorka.
Right,
who is a literal Nazi.
Right.
And I think that's a really good point.
Yes.
Because what's he going to do now?
Right, so he's returning as the executive chairman of Breitbart News.
Yeah.
And, you know, as Melissa points out, I mean, he's just in a much stronger position to publish Trump propaganda with the veneer of independence at Breitbart,
uh-huh,
rather than from a seat at the White
House. It's a really interesting, like, outside in.
Yes.
Like, it's, I remember that Maddow had a segment about it, on Friday, and she talked to a reporter who had done extensive reporting on this matter. And
right.
So, you know, I think that, you know, we'll get into this later, but there's an interesting connection between Trump and Bannon that definitely supports this. But,
right. But
I mean, first of all, Trump, you know, even pretty much said this outright.
Yes.
He said, quote, "Steve Bannon will be a tough and smart new voice at Breitbart, maybe even better than ever before. Fake news needs the competition."
I mean, he basically just admitted that Bannon's leaving to be a propaganda machine.
Yeah.
I mean,
which he was already doing before he joined the Trump campaign.
Right. So,
and I think, perhaps correctly, they think Bannon can be more influential on the outside.
Right.
That's the question that remains to be seen.
Well, and I think now that he has been an insider.
Yeah.
So now I feel like it lends even more credibility.
Mm,
you know, like, he's been inside on the White House, and so now he's talking about it because he's an insider.
You're saying to his audience.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
They might view him as more credible.
Right.
And, you know, and Bannon even confirmed the sentiments that Trump shared.
Mm-hmm.
He said, quote, "If there's any confusion out there, let me clear it up. I'm leaving the White House and going to war for Trump against his opponents on Capitol Hill, in the media, and in corporate America." So, like, they're pretty much out and out saying, yeah, this is exactly what's happening.
Right. And this seems like a good time to point out that both Trump and Bannon have close ties to Trump mega donor and the largest funder of Breitbart, Robert Mercer.
Yeah, and actually his daughter, Rebecca, was part of Trump's transition team and was behind the hiring of Bannon in the first place. So, yeah, I think any sort of story of, like, you know, Trump and Bannon falling out, if you see any of that, I think it's bullshit.
Oh,
I mean,
totally.
I think that this is definitely intentional.
Oh, like, yeah.
That Bannon is going to leave and now be a voice on the outside trying
right.
to either push Trump more toward that, like, sort of white supremacist vein.
Right.
And put pressure on him, or work in tandem with Trump and go to war, quote unquote, against his opponents.
Right. And I also like what Melissa said. It's also sort of signaling a false pivot is coming.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, the new chief of staff has his shit under control.
Yeah.
And no, that's not
There's no pivot, friends. There will never be a fucking pivot.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is all we get.
So, you know, Bannon had said he was planning to stay for more than a year either way. I was totally going to break up with him after a year.
Yeah, exactly.
But there does seem to be some truth to that sentiment. So, Matt Schlapp, who's chairman of the American Conservative Union and a longtime friend of Steve Bannon, said, quote, "I think Steve is going to be more effective on the outside. On the outside, if you're well-funded and you're feared and you have a platform, you're going to be a power player. Steve has all of that in spades." And I think that reminds me, too, of what happened with Corey Lewandowski.
Right.
After he was fired as Trump's campaign manager.
Right.
He appeared on CNN as, a
Trump surrogate.
A Trump surrogate. And I believe, too, he was also getting paid by Trump still. Like, he was still getting,
I believe so.
He was still getting paid while he was at CNN for a period of time.
Right.
So, it was, completely blatant.
Exactly.
He's, totally a Trump lackey.
Well, and also, Lewandowski still periodically shows up at the White House and has Trump's ear.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they're not formally, he's not formally working for Trump, he still has influence over Trump.
I don't actually think that Corey Lewandowski has that much influence.
You don't think so?
He hasn't shown up that much
right.
in the story. So I would have to look into that.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Hmm.
But I mean, I think that essentially if people want to believe that him and Steve Bannon are on the outs, I would say you would be mistaken.
Yeah.
Because it seems like they're working in tandem, at least for now. So what happens now that Steve Bannon's gone?
Right. Well, Jennifer Rubin, who is a conservative op-ed writer for the Washington Post, states unequivocally, quote, "Maybe Bannon appealed to Trump's worst instincts, but honestly, does the president have any good ones?" And narrator, no.
No. Yeah, again, Steve Bannon leaving the White House, not going to be that much of a difference. I mean, it's one less asshole in there.
Right. Great.
Great. But it's, in the grand scheme of things, not going to make that much of a difference.
Right.
We think. And, I think it's odd because Bannon was sort of set up as this, shadow president. In a lot of narratives, people were he's the one who's actually, pulling the strings. But as Rubin writes, quote, "Bannon was the faux intellectual giving direction and form to Trump's views, but Trump's deeply warped views, glaring ignorance, and defective character are the root of the problem." Again, the fish rots from the head.
Right.
There's still a fucking racist, sexist, xenophobic, homophobic asshole. I probably didn't even cover
everything.
We miss some. We miss some. But there's still this asshole in the White House who is pretending to be president. His sort of blatant bigotry and racism that he displayed during the campaign has completely followed him to the White House. So, we still have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. And I think so Bannon being there or not, it doesn't change that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Sarah. So now let's get into some Trumpland bullshit outside of this Bannon mess.
Mm-hmm.
So first up, talk to me about the Secret Service.
Yeah. So Devin and I had some other plans about what we might want to talk about today. And then we saw this story about from USA Today this morning about how Trump's travel and his family is basically depleting Secret Service funds.
Yeah.
So according to USA Today, the Secret Service can no longer pay hundreds of agents it needs to carry out this sort of expanded protective mission because basically Trump's family is so fucking big and they all travel too much.
Yeah, no, seriously. So under Trump, 42 people have protection, a number that includes 18 members of his family. That's a big family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's up from 31 during the Obama administration. It's also important to point out that Trump has adult children,
right,
which makes it even more complicated because they need to be protected no matter where they go, if that makes sense. So, if Eric Trump takes a trip overseas, the Secret Service goes with him.
Right. It's true. They do take a lot of overseas trips.
Yes.
And, just a reminder that Trump alone has spent nearly every weekend away from the White House at one of several properties he owns.
Right.
And just FYI, his trips to Mar-a-Lago alone are estimated to cost at least $3 million fucking each.
Yes. And I read on Twitter someone was talking about they spend $60,000 for each trip on golf cart rentals.
Just the
golf cart rentals for the Secret Service.
Yeah.
And Trump gets a cut of that.
Uh-huh.
So, think about that for a second.
Well, that's the other thing, is that there's so much that's abnormal about this presidency.
Right.
We're, like, almost not even talking about all these, like, you know, business conflicts
right.
that still exist
right.
that haven't been resolved.
Exactly.
And that play into things like this story.
Right.
You know, and the Secret Service director is on record with USA Today and said that more than 1,000 agents have already hit the federally mandated caps for salary and overtime allowances that were meant to last the entire fucking year.
Jesus.
Remember, it's still only August.
Yeah, that's a lot of overtime.
Uh-huh.
yeah, and without congressional intervention to provide additional funding, the Secret Service will not even be able to pay agents for work they've already done.
Yep, and they're still working.
Yeah.
And they have no idea if because, again, like you said, they need, you know, congressional intervention.
Right.
And, you know, I just want to, like, point out that maybe Obama didn't golf that much.
Yeah.
Donald
right.
Trump.
Yeah, right.
Maybe he actually golfed a normal amount for a president.
Right.
So just saying.
Just
fucking saying.
Just throwing that out there.
And the thing about the Secret Service that I learned this morning as well is that they already have issues with attrition.
Yeah.
So a special investigative panel recently found that that agents and uniform officers worked, quote, an unsustainable number of hours.
Yeah.
So they already found that, and now they're not even sure that they're going to get paid for all this extensive work that
right.
they have to do with this administration.
Yeah.
It's probably even more grueling than what they've ever had to deal with.
It's a stressful job.
Like, again, that's a problem.
It's
because
a problem.
They're going to have a big issue with trying to keep people
mm-hmm.
on the Secret Service.
Especially if they can't pay them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's pretty simple. Yeah, so basically the TLDR of the story is that the Secret Service is working way harder
yes.
than the so-called fucking president / occupant of the White House.
I like that one.
I know. We got that from Stacey Abrams. And yeah, they might not even be able to be compensated for all the hours they've put in and continue to put in.
Right.
So it's a big problem. And I mean, I know this is obvious and probably goes without saying, but it feels worth it to say. Like, could you imagine if this were all Obama?
No. Let me quote Chuck Schumer for the millionth time. Republicans would be howling at the moon.
Howling at the moon. It's so true, though. I mean, like, I feel like they would have already been calling for his impeachment.
Oh, yeah.
And if this were Hillary,
oh,
could you imagine if, like, Chelsea Clinton was, like, skipping off to all these countries and, like...
And yeah. taking the Secret Service with her.
But this is what the Trump children are doing.
Yeah.
So, they would use any little excuse
right.
to try to go after either an Obama if he were doing this or Hillary if she were doing this. Like, there's such a blatant double standard, and it's so real and it's so infuriating.
It is infuriating.
And, yeah, I mean, he's basically, I think we said this, but Trump is basically running Secret Service like his businesses.
Right.
And it's, like, to the ground.
Right.
So we felt like that was an important story to talk about because I think it's another indication of how not only incompetent the Trump administration is, but, like, I want to say entitled, too.
Yeah, I like the way you put it. You said basically the Secret Service is working way harder
mm-hmm,
than
they
Trump
are.
Himself.
I mean, they've always worked hard.
Oh, absolutely.
But, like, the president of the United States up until Trump has always worked hard.
Exactly.
Like, Trump is the reason why... they've already depleted their funds is because Trump vacationed so much.
Right.
You know, and his children vacationed so much.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with vacationing, but, like, if it's to the extent where you can't even pay your Secret Service agents, then you're doing something wrong.
So true.
Okay, so let's move on to more bullshit, which is evergreen. And this is a story that's kind of flying below the radar.
Yeah.
We felt like it was important to talk about. So Trump is rolling back an Obama-era contraception rule that explicitly states that employee health benefits should include coverage for contraception.
Right. And this was the central issue in the now infamous Hobby Lobby case, in which the Supreme fucking Court ruled that, quote, closely held private companies with religious beliefs that disavow contraception can seek an exemption to this rule.
Yeah, but now it looks like the Trump administration just wants to roll back the rule in general.
Exactly.
Like, and so that the rule stated that employee health benefits include coverage for contraception.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and the Supreme Court said, well, unless you don't believe in it. Yeah, so basically Trump's new plan would broaden that decision and give companies a pathway to opt out of providing contraception to its employees. And it also dismantles a quote-unquote workaround put in place by the Obama administration after the ruling that would enable women to get coverage for contraception even if the company they worked for wouldn't provide it.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of said, well, okay, so you don't have to get it from your employer, but we'll make it so that you can get it.
You can still get it. And yeah, fun fact, the workaround itself is being challenged in court with religious employers claiming that it made the companies quote unquote complicit in sin.
Yeah.
That is a thing.
That was a legal argument.
That was a legal argument.
That they tried to make.
Cannot make this up. Yeah, and, you know, Hillary Burns, who is assistant general at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, said of the new rule, quote, it would go a long way to restoring religious freedom and conscience rights.
Yeah, whatever that means. And just, like, life advice, if the government is taking policy cues from a religious group, it probably isn't constitutional.
Well, I'm gonna couch that a little bit, because there are progressive religious groups
right.
who aren't saying bullshit like
That's
this.
True. I guess what I just mean
is... The thing that tends to show up, especially in conservative, you know, administrations, is that kind of hypocritical
that's
bullshit.
True. That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, and the National Women's Law Center is actually gearing up to sue if this rule goes into effect. So we already have people who are like, we'll see you in court, motherfucker.
Yeah, basically.
Which is great. Lawyers preparing potential legal cases for opponents of the change say that if the rule resembles the leaked draft, the policy could qualify as sex discrimination since it would disproportionately affect women's health care.
Right.
So that's an interesting
note. And it
could be vital.
Right. And they are also planning to argue that leaving a decision on contraceptive coverage up to employers could amount to religious discrimination by subjecting workers to beliefs of their employers.
Yes, yeah, see, and why wasn't... I mean, it's interesting because that is a good point, but it's that point apparently wasn't compelling enough in Hobby Lobby.
Right, which is, you know, because they're complicit in sin.
Right. So, yeah, I didn't even think about it that way, is that if your employer is a company that has a quote-unquote religious belief... But you could also say, well, you shouldn't be imposing your religious beliefs on me.
Exactly.
You're my employer. But again, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of that company.
Right. And I don't think that's going to get better now that Gorsuch is on there. So
on the Supreme Court?
On the Supreme Court. Okay, Sarah, so let's jump into our next block, which are our gratitude checks. So what are you grateful for today?
Okay, so the first thing I'm grateful for is a federal court in Texas. So three federal judges at the U.S. District Court in San Antonio has ordered Republican legislators in Texas to redraw congressional district boundaries after finding that the original map was meant to discriminate against minority voters, which...
Right.
Surprise. This is what Republicans do. But
sky blue, water wet.
Uh-huh. But, you know, a court is saying, yeah, motherfuckers, we see you. So you got to fix your shit.
That's great.
Yeah. So the district boundaries for the 27th and 35th districts must be changed. So that's what they found. And they must be changed ahead of the 2018 elections. The state of Texas, by the way, has 36 districts. Republicans hold 25, while Democrats have only 11.
Wow.
Yeah, and this ruling is part of a six-year legal battle that started when the Republican-led Texas state legislator redrew congressional district boundary lines. And a court found that the boundaries had discriminatory intent and ordered them to be, redrawn.
Okay.
Which they were in 2013. This all being said, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton will appeal this most recent ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court. And we'll try to keep the boundaries intact for the 2018 election. So I think that they're hoping to not only appeal the case, but to do so that it takes long enough that it won't affect the 2018 elections, which is, again, another
I was just going to say, is he going for, like, King Dickwad over here?
I mean, yeah. He's an attorney general for a Republican governor in Texas.
In Texas.
And, like, it just reminds me of what you said. Like, Gorsuch is on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these, like, very crucial decisions could hinge on, you know, one vote or two votes. And,
right.
Again, elections have motherfucking consequences. And we've also talked about in recent episodes about how Republicans legislate white supremacy. And, you know, gerrymandering and voter suppression are among the truly vile and cynical ways that Republicans grab and maintain power. So court decisions like these are, you know, really important steps in order to get to a place where our society is truly democratic. And we are far from that because there is still rampant voter suppression in a lot of different ways. And we're going to have an action item around that. But that's my first gratitude check. And I think that decision is a positive one. The second thing I'm grateful for is the impact of Hidden Figures. So the film has inspired the State Department to launch a first of its kind publicly funded educational exchange program for women.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know. The new program is called hashtag Hidden No More. Again, that's the Twitter hashtag, not the actual name of the program.
But, one day it will be. Yeah. One day it'll be on official report.
So Hidden No More will invite 50 women from 50 different countries to participate in a cultural and educational exchange aimed at cultivating the efforts and achievements of women in STEM.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and it came about after the State Department was flooded with requests from foreign embassies to screen the film abroad. And they ended up doing an unprecedented, like, 80 screenings. So they wanted to build on that momentum, and that's why they created this program. So nominated participants will travel to the U.S. in October and spend several weeks meeting with universities and women-oriented organizations like the Girl Scouts to discuss STEM-related subjects, including diversity. And we've talked about the Girl Scouts, or you've talked about the Girl Scouts a lot on this show.
I'm going to talk about them again today.
But we've talked about, like, the cybersecurity badges, the STEM, don't they have
the STEM badges?
STEM badges.
And then, yeah, and then there's more, too, that we'll talk about.
And Devin's like, oh, you just wait.
Just wait.
Yeah, so I feel like these kind of initiatives are really crucial because, you know, women earn approximately one-third of the undergraduate degrees awarded in STEM fields in the U.S., even though they account for almost 60% of college graduates. So, you know, there's a lot of women graduating from college, but not a lot of women being, you know, encouraged necessarily to go into STEM fields.
Right.
Not that, you know, and I will say as someone who was never super interested in STEM.
Right.
Like, I don't think that, you know, not doing STEM makes your work less valuable.
Right.
That's not the point. The fact that, you know, STEM is a very prestigious and important field and not enough women are being encouraged to go into it.
Right. I think the issue is less like, you know, STEM is more important and more just we want to, you know, we don't want to keep women away from it.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of women are discouraged from going into STEM because boys are pushed into sort of these more quote unquote technical areas.
Absolutely.
And so that's definitely an issue. You know, there's obviously also a racial disparity as well. So while only 18% of employed scientists and engineers are white women, only 5% are Asian women, 1% are Black women, and 1% are Hispanic women.
Wow.
So definitely a racial element there as well. And this program, I think, for me, is a reminder that while the Trump administration is an ongoing fucking dumpster fire, there are still some good things happening in government.
Yes.
And, you know, by all likelihood, it's happening from career civil servants.
I was going to say career civil servants who are in the government.
Uh-huh, and are not necessarily, you know, tied to the goals, the larger, more heinous goals of this administration. So programs like this, I'm like, it's good to know that there's still some good being done within the government.
Absolutely.
So those are the things I'm grateful for today. How about you, Devin?
Okay, so actually, I'm going to talk about the Girl Scouts.
It's funny because I didn't even realize you were going to talk about the Girl Scouts.
I know.
I just saw on the, you say GSUSA.
Which is Girl Scouts of...
And I was just like, oh, I've never heard of this.
Yeah.
Apparently I have.
Yeah. So anyway, the Girl Scouts are partnering with NASA and SETI to create 6 new space science badges.
Oh my gosh, they're killing it.
I know. So I feel like I do talk about Girl Scouts a lot on this show, but they've been on point this year.
Yeah.
So they added 19 cybersecurity badges, 23 STEM badges, and now these new NASA-backed space science badges.
That's so awesome.
It's just so cool.
Yeah.
So Sylvia Acevedo, who's the CEO of the Girl Scouts, sees these badges as a way for girls to develop or enhance their interest in space, technology, engineering, and math. She also is a rocket scientist.
No big deal.
So
the CEO of the Girl Scouts is also a rocket scientist.
Yeah, she worked at NASA's JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab.
Nice.
And which is just really cool.
Yeah.
So she's all very much about these STEM badges for the Girl Scouts.
That makes sense that they're emphasizing that.
Yeah, and so the Girl Scouts are saying, quote, in order to earn these badges, girls will participate in outdoor activities that require developing their own ideas about the natural world and then observing and testing those concepts. They'll connect both with the community of amateur astronomers through the Night Sky Network and with women at NASA to explore STEM careers. Fun fact, many female NASA astronauts were once Girl Scouts.
Oh, that's so awesome.
I know. And honestly, I wonder, because I was in Girl Scouts. I don't know if you guys knew this, or you friends knew this, but I was a Girl Scout.
And you're also a mom.
I'm also a mom, just in case you didn't know. I mean, I wonder if these badges would have changed my life.
Yeah, because it would have changed the direction of what you wanted to explore. It's funny that you say that, because I said I was never really interested in STEM. Part of me wonders if I was never... You know, my parents were definitely encouraged us to go toward education, and they were both in technical fields. My dad was a doctor. My mom was first a chemistry professor and then a computer science professor.
Right.
So it's not like there wasn't any examples for us or like any push for us to be like more technical. But I wonder if larger society sort of shaped my feelings too.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was a Girl Scout, the badges that I got were more about art. I mean, I have three in fashion design, which is fine. Yeah. It's just... And
those are the things that girls are more being pushed toward.
Right. And those were the badges that were available in the Girl Scouts at the time.
Yeah.
You know, but to be fair, to couch a little bit, I also have badges in personal finance, business leadership, and archery.
Oh, nice.
So, I mean...
You just show up to a bar randomly and, like, pull out your archery badge. Don't fuck with me.
Yeah. And it does really warm my cold Disney villain heart to see the Girl Scouts move towards teaching girls about things that have been historically excluded from.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's for sure.
And lest we forget, Hillary Clinton, Lisa Ling, Sandra Day O'Connor, Sally freaking Ride, and Michelle Obama were all Girl Scouts.
Great group of people.
Yeah, and fun fact, Hillary Clinton is listed as they have like lists of famous alum.
Yeah.
She's listed on the government list, not on the first family list.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What's the significance of that?
Well, so the first family is like people who were first family in the White House and their kids, and the people in government are like people who ran for president and president.
I mean, she was like a, you know, U.S. senator from New York and secretary of state, and like should be the fucking president.
Right, exactly.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, but I liked that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay, and so the second thing that I'm grateful for, this story just cracked me up. So
I had no idea about the story until you put it on the show.
So Minnesota refuses to return a Confederate flag to Virginia, and Virginia has asked very nicely.
Is that in the fucking headline of the story?
No.
That's just your own.
That's my own commentary.
But they've been asking for a long time.
They've been asking like every couple of years since like the 60s.
And it's still in the news? Like it still keeps popping up?
Yeah. I mean, this is just one of those like silly, like, not silly, but like human interest stories that comes up every once in a while. So basically, the article opens, quote, "The Confederate icon, a scarred and hole-worn Virginia battle flag, was captured by the first Minnesota private, Marshall Sherman, at the bloody and brutal Battle of Gettysburg in 1863. Many of the first Minnesota regiment, a volunteer force, died in the Union battle against the South, and Sherman won the Medal of Honor for his role," and he also stole this flag.
So in this battle, they took this flag and were like, it's ours.
Yeah.
Like, all right, we captured it.
Right. And so Virginia keeps asking for it back, and Minnesota keeps saying no.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and in the past 100 years, a president has demanded they return it. Congress passed a resolution saying that they need to return it. And Virginia has threatened to sue so that they return it.
No way.
And Minnesota is just completely unimpressed and is like, then basically told Virginia to go fuck themselves.
I had no idea.
So
that is intense.
I know. In 2000, when Virginia legislators requested the Southern Cross flag, which is the Confederate flag, back again, the governor at the time, Jesse Ventura, said, quote, "Why? We won. We took it. That makes it our heritage."
Oh my God. Wait, so it's called the Southern Cross flag?
Yeah, that's what the Confederate flag.
That's what they call the
Confederate flag.
That is so bizarre.
Yeah. And I love this because, as Jameel Smith said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but people worried about Confederate history will be thrilled to learn about the existence of books.
Yes, and we talked about this in one of our recent podcasts in relation to people taking down Confederate statues.
Exactly.
Like, taking down statues is not, quote unquote, erasing history.
Right.
Minnesota keeping this battle won flag is not erasing history.
No.
Like, there are books.
Right. And if they really need to see the flag in person, they can head to Minnesota and learn about the men who died to capture it.
And did you say to me earlier that this is in a museum somewhere in Minnesota?
Yes, it's displayed in a museum.
Yeah.
As part of their like history.
But Virginia keeps asking for it back and Minnesota just keeps saying, fuck you.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Okay, so let's get into some listener gratitude checks.
Yeah, so we have three today. The first one is from Monique. She said, quote, one of my favorite artists right now, Lizzo, released a video for a new song she performed on tour called Water Me. And it's all about self-love and pride. And the video is amazing. And the whole thing gives me joy.
It is a banging song.
Oh, I haven't listened to it.
It's so good.
I do love that art and music can lift people up in this way. So I think that's a beautiful gratitude check, Monique.
Yes. The next one is from Hannah. She said, quote, I'm grateful for women doctors supporting, understanding, and affirming my experiences and taking me seriously. I've been undergoing an incredibly arduous surgical recovery, and it means so much to me that they validated me and are ready to work with me to help me feel better.
I love that because I can relate.
Yes.
Like, I, you know, after I first moved to LA, I went and saw a couple of different, like, world-class, quote-unquote, neurologists.
Yeah.
And people who were known for treating concussions, and they were both male doctors.
Right.
And I just wasn't taken seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I just didn't feel like I was taken seriously. And it discouraged me from going and seeing a doctor for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I got to a point where my headaches were getting so bad, I was just like, I can't not go see a doctor. Like, I can't be managing this alone.
Right.
Like, I have to go and try and see doctors again. And, you know, I think it's, you know, it's not just necessarily male doctors that are, you know,
dismissive
of female patients. I think it's a phenomenon overall, but I definitely have found that, female doctors tend to be more empathetic and understanding and validating, like
yes.
Hannah has said.
Right.
And so I definitely relate to this, and I think this is a great gratitude check because it can feel pretty lonely when you know there's something wrong with you and you're not being validated
yeah.
in any way.
Especially by someone whose job it is to make you feel better.
And they have a certain amount of control,
right?
Like
right.
they can help you or not,
right.
or they can prescribe something to you or not,
right.
or all these things. So I think that's a great gratitude check, and it's something that I can relate to. So awesome for Hannah. Thank you for sharing that. And the last one is from a listener named Sahar. Mm-hmm. So do you want to go
sure.
through what her gratitude check was?
I love this one.
I love this one a lot.
She said, quote, I was at my cousin's wedding this weekend, and my aunt said to me, you are such a loving, sweet girl. May God give you the best husband. I nodded just to avoid a potential confrontational conversation about how marriage just isn't a priority for me. My cousin, the bride, responded by saying, oh my God, no, forget a husband. May God find her the best people to fundraise her campaign for the Texas state legislator. May God help her smash the patriarchy.
I love that so
yes.
much.
Yes.
May God help her smash the patriarchy.
Yeah.
That is like an iconic line.
I know. It's amazing.
From a person who just got married.
Yeah.
And was like, getting married is great. Not the only thing.
Right.
It's interesting because I have a close friend who got married recently, and she had a whole Facebook post about how she was so happy to get married, and, you know, she feels like she's marrying the love of her life. Like, it's really great. But she's like, I don't see this. I'm not treating this as a life accomplishment.
Right.
And I hope none of you do the same.
Yeah.
Because I feel like so much women are, that's like the message we get, is like one of the biggest things you can quote unquote accomplish is getting married. And it's like, there's this really fucked up, you know, narrative around marriage, especially as it sort of relates to women.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I got married, and I got married pretty young.
Uh-huh.
I got married 5 years ago.
So you were like, what, 24?
I was like 24.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people just heaped praise on me
yeah.
for getting married. They were like, oh my God, this is amazing. Congratulations. I'm like, I just graduated from college.
Yeah.
Like, maybe congratulate me on that because that's pretty fucking
yeah.
cool. You
yeah.
know? And it was literally just this like sort of cult around
mm-hmm.
like, you're getting married, this is great.
Yeah.
And
like, you locked down a man.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
exactly.
Shit like that.
Exactly. And but no mention of me graduating college or
what you were going to do
exactly.
like, work-wise necessarily.
Exactly.
Not that that's everything either,
but it just, you know,
it's so telling.
Exactly. And I was like, honestly, at this point, you should really be congratulating me for like being able to make myself food. Like, honestly,
I could be a productive adult.
Exactly. So
yeah, it's interesting because Nick and I have been together for 8 years, and you know, marriage isn't something we're necessarily opposed to,
right?
Like, but we just don't necessarily feel like we have to get married. Like
yeah.
that's just kind of our own attitude, but
right?
I definitely get asked that a lot.
I'm
and
sure
he doesn't get asked it ever. Hardly
oh.
ever. No one's ever like, so when are you guys gonna get married?
Yeah.
People,
to him, yeah.
No one asked him. Everyone is always like, when are you getting engaged?
Right.
Like, and it Like, when are you moving in? When are you getting engaged? When are you going to have kids? Like, when are you getting married?
When are you going to have another kid?
Yeah, you get that a lot.
Oh my God, so much.
We could go on a whole tangent about it. But I just love this story from Sahara.
Yeah.
And I love that her cousin backed her up and was like, marriage isn't the only thing. Like, let's, you know, may God help her smash the patriarchy. And I'm so about that.
Okay, Sarah, so it is Monday. Let's name the dickwads of the week.
Yeah, well, we have a dishonorable mention.
That's right.
And then we have one loser.
Right.
I mean, really, it's a toss-up. I feel like we say this every time. And again, there are probably more that...
We've missed.
But anyway, so our dishonorable mention is Republicans in Nevada. So Democratic State Senator Nicole Cannizzaro is now the third Democratic lawmaker targeted for recall. And it looks like, you know, sort of a strategy by Republicans to take control of the Democratic controlled state Senate. So the other two who have been targeted for recall are Senators Joyce Woodhouse and Patricia Farley, who is technically an independent,
okay,
but now caucuses with Democrats.
Got it. Wait, it's so weird. They're all women.
Oh, yeah. They're all women. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. Totally. And again, we've talked about the Nevada state legislator a few times on the podcast, mm-hmm, and they are close to 40% women.
Yeah.
Which I believe is second only to Vermont.
Yeah.
And they've been able to pass a lot of really progressive laws, you know, not because necessarily there's gender parity, but I think that that has a lot to do with it.
Absolutely. I mean, you get diversity of thought when you
get actual diversity. You get of thought.
Not like white dudes diversity of thought. Yeah. Like actual diversity of thought.
Yeah. The white dude diversity of thought is always in defense of actual diversity.
Right.
When someone says something shitty, they're like, well, we can't just clamp down on diversity of thought. Let me just tell you, sir, all these white guy, like bullshit white guy opinions are unoriginal.
Yeah.
We've heard this before. So that's not even diversity of thought.
That's true. As soon as I said it, I was like, that sounds like the white guy defense, but I mean actual diversity.
Yeah. So yeah, getting back to the story, you know, honestly, it's like kind of a ragtag and like lazy-ish effort,
yeah,
to remove non-Republicans from office. And mm-hmm, the governor of Nevada, who is a Republican himself, Brian Sandoval, was even like, what did he say?
He said, quote, I had no knowledge that they were going on. It's something I'm not going to be participating in. They're on their own.
That was like the ultimate, like, I don't even know her.
Right?
Like, he was
remove
like,
remove me from this narrative.
Please exclude me from this narrative. This is not. So like, he's even like, these Republican like people who are trying to do this, I don't know them. Like, no. And so the quote unquote reasons for removing these three, again, female senators, range from their support of a sanctuary bill, so Woodhouse, mm-hmm, to voting for a tax increase, Farley, to being generally, quote, pro-felon and anti-business. So that's referring to Cannizzaro, which is just kind of like, what? So they just disagree with you, like, yeah, politically?
Right.
And that's your reason for trying to recall them?
Yeah, recall is supposed to be a tool against corruption.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on.
Yeah. So it's all bullshit. And, you know, just to get technical... To qualify the recall, backers need to obtain signatures from at least 25% of voters who participated in the 2016 election within 90 days of the petition being filed. And fun fact, Devin, apparently no Nevada legislator has ever been successfully recalled from office.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's supposed to be a difficult process because,
yeah,
it's not supposed to be a political weapon. It's supposed to be...
And we in California know about a famous recall. Gray Davis,
yes,
and that's how Arnold Schwarzenegger ended up becoming governor.
Right, exactly.
So that was a whole thing.
It was a whole thing.
Yeah. So yeah, I think this story is just another reminder that Republicans will literally do anything to rip power away and to steal it for themselves and to like maintain it.
Absolutely.
As we've talked about with, you know, different ways to suppress the vote or to dilute the vote through gerrymandering.
Exactly.
And so this is like absolutely on brand with,
right,
Republicans. And
absolutely,
I think it's just another reminder to Democrats, like, you know, when they go low, I mean, we got to go low too.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want us to be doing this.
Right.
But we have to fight back a little dirtier,
well,
I think.
I think you've said it on the pod before. It's like, so we were playing a card game and then the Republicans got up and set the house on fire and Democrats are still sitting there playing cards.
Yeah. And I didn't come up with that. Right. It was from someone on Twitter, but it has stuck with me.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think about that all the time.
So, I hope that we can take this as like a mini lesson. Again, Republicans will literally do anything. They have no shame. They'll like pull the most bullshit move to try to grab and maintain power.
It's
so
true.
Dishonorable mention. But who is our loser this week?
Ding, ding, ding. We have a loser.
Always.
Always. It is the entire Department of Health and Human Services.
Uh-huh.
Which is headed by Tom Price, who is a hashtag noted dickwad.
Noted dickwad Tom Price, who heads up the Department of Health and Human Services. So why are they our dickwad of the week, Devin?
So Health and Human Services notified 81 grantees that it would be discontinuing the Obama-era funding under the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program, which helps educate teenagers on how to avoid unwanted pregnancies. And almost all of them offer specialized programs that go beyond traditional comprehensive sex education programs.
Yeah.
So the HHS has pulled the funding after just 3 years instead of the planned 5.
Do you notice we keep saying, like, the Trump administration is pulling the Obama-era rule or Obama-era funding? Again, elections have motherfucking consequences. Like, the point of voting is to produce policy outcomes. Right. And this is the kind of shit that... in this era, especially with Trump just like going, you know, completely bonkers every single day, this is stuff that flies below the radar, but it's important. It impacts people's lives.
Absolutely. Do we care about your fucking feelings?
Nope.
We do not.
Just vote for fucking Democrats. Listen, and I have said this on Twitter. I don't think I've said this on the podcast. I'm like, even someone like Bernie Sanders, who I deeply distrust, and he isn't even a Democrat. He caucuses with Democrats, but that's important.
Yeah.
If he ended up becoming the 2020 nominee, I would phone bank and canvas and volunteer and vote for him.
Absolutely.
Because any Democrat is literally better than most Republicans.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much any Republican.
Right.
You know? So anyway, that's just my side rant.
No, totally.
So let's go back to this story. So why did they do this, Devin?
Well, okay, so the HHS said a statement that the, quote, very weak evidence of positive impact of these programs stands in stark contrast to the promised results, jeopardizing the youth who were served.
Which feels like a lot of bullshit.
Oh, it's
again, they pulled the funding after just 3 years instead of the planned 5. So how would they necessarily know that it wasn't doing enough if they're pulling the funding before they even have the opportunity to show what it can do?
Exactly.
Yeah, and so Rachel Fay, who's the director of public policy at the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy, said, quote, judging the current round of grantees on the evaluation results of the first round makes no sense. The whole point of the first round was to learn what did and didn't work, and that gets incorporated into what they're doing in the second round. So essentially she's saying the first bit is supposed to be learning
then
adjusting.
Exactly.
And trying to come up with better solutions, which is a good life lesson, like just in general. But here's some good news.
Yeah.
So even if HHS continues to refuse to fund the grants, a decision that will come, you know, around June 30th, 2018, it's not game over just yet.
Right.
So it is possible that Congress may decide to appropriate money to the TPP program in September.
Right.
But yeah, there's always a but.
There's always a but. So Genevieve Martinez Garcia of Healthy Teen Network in Baltimore said that there's big concern that the funds could be shifted to supporting abstinence-only programs, which Republicans fucking love.
Yeah.
Which she argues are, quote, based in fear, in shaming, and are extremely heteronormative.
I mean,
that's
all of those things.
Pretty much.
And they don't even fucking work.
Right.
So, like, okay, so there was a study in 2011 that found that, quote, increasing emphasis on abstinence education is positively correlated with teenage pregnancy and birth rates. I mean, lay duh.
It's not funny, but it's kind of funny.
I mean, it's funny because it's so ridiculously true.
Yes.
It's so obvious, you know? In fact, the states with the highest teen pregnancy rates, so Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Mississippi, have policies that emphasize abstinence-only sex ed. So, I mean, it's pretty clear that more comprehensive sex ed programs are the ways you actually decrease teenage pregnancy.
Right.
And these Republicans are all about that, supposedly, but they don't actually want to put policies in place that help them achieve that.
I know.
Because they're just hypocrites in every single way.
Right, and I just don't understand. Like, it's like, nobody's like, teenage pregnancy, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, it just makes no sense to me to cut these sort of programs that are at least attempting to solve the problem.
Because what it comes down to is controlling women.
Yes.
Controlling women's bodies, controlling their sexuality.
Right.
Just controlling women in every single way.
Exactly.
And so that's really what all these sort of policies really boil down to. And,
right.
You know, I just want to say it with me one more time and with meaning. Elections have motherfucking consequences. And this is the kind of shit that happens under Republican administrations. And so vote for a fucking Democrat every single fucking time. Okay, Devin, so let's get into our action items. And we have two today. So what's the first one?
So the first one we actually talked about earlier in the pod.
We alluded to.
Yeah. To end voter suppression by 2018. So this is a fact and tip sheet courtesy of the Strategic Institute for Intersectional Policy. And they're launching a voting rights campaign aimed at stopping voter suppression before the 2018 midterm elections. So this effort openly seeks to re-enfranchise 50 million voters and quell GOP efforts to dismantle federal and civil voting rights. So voters have been disenfranchised via a multi-pronged effort from voter ID laws, voter purging, ADA violations, polling closures, felony disenfranchisement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, like they said, it's a multi-pronged effort.
Right.
And, you know, SIIP has called on Democrats to voluntarily withdraw from voter purging systems, take measures to repeal voter ID restrictions, and ensure voting is accessible, and also flood the circuit and district courts with challenges to voter suppression policies.
Yes.
But here's where we come in and what we can do.
Right.
So, and we'll put all these links on our show notes so you can find the stuff there. But the first thing, the first call to action from the Strategic Institute for Intersectional Policy is sign petitions to end voter suppression and voter purging. Again, we'll have those links on show notes.
Mm-hmm.
Send letters to your reps about supporting voting right measures. Support SIIP's efforts to restore the vote with hashtag WeAllVote2018. And then evergreen advice. What's our evergreen advice?
Oh, yeah. I feel like we talk about this every episode. But ourstates.org is a, you know, they have a tool where you can find your state legislatures and how to contact them. And you can call them and push them on bills to protect voting rights.
Yeah. And they have, again, we've talked about this website a lot, but you can click on different issues.
Right.
And then they show whether your state is considering bills to either attack voting rights or protect voting rights.
Right.
So our second action item is specifically for North Carolina Hellions. Make your voice heard on redistricting. And we hope that you are listening to this on Monday because this action item is happening Tuesday, or at least before when it's going to happen on Tuesday.
Right.
So Representative Dwayne Hall tweeted earlier this month that there will be public hearings in 6 places across North Carolina on Tuesday, August 22nd, on redistricting. And then the vote on the maps will happen a few days later.
Wow.
Yeah, and it seems like it's the only opportunity for constituents to express their opinions in regards to that SCOTUS ruling to redraw North Carolina.
Right.
So the judges had ordered the state legislature to pass a redistricting plan by Friday, September 1st.
Man, they really left these hearings to the 11th hour, huh?
Yep. Yep. And it feels like that wasn't necessarily accidental.
Oh, no.
And it actually was really hard to track down when and where these hearings would be taking place. Like, I couldn't really find any newspaper articles on it. I was like searching through Twitter, but I found it. So here it goes. So all these hearings are taking place at 4 p.m. on, again, Tuesday, August 22nd at Caldwell Community College and Technical Institute in Hudson, at Central Piedmont Community College in Charlotte, at Fayetteville Technical Community College in Fayetteville, Gulfford Technical Community College in Jamestown, Halifax Community College in Weldon, and then room 643 in the Legislative Office Building in Raleigh. So those are all the places you can go to, again, on Tuesday, August 22nd at 4 p.m. Make your voice heard. This is a really, really important issue, and it affects everything.
Yeah, and I just want to say thank you, Sarah, for being a superhero and tracking all that down, because I know how hard that was to track down.
It was, I feel like it's not accidental that it was hard, if you live in North Carolina, you know, if you're able to show up, because these are the kind of things, local politics, these are the kind of things that are impactful and important. So we wanted to get that on your radar, Hellions in North Carolina. And again, like we said in our first action item, voter suppression is something that we should all be pushing on. I feel like that should be priority one.
Absolutely. I think it was Sarah Kendzior who said we need to make sure everyone can vote.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we talk about, you know, Russia meddling in our election,
right,
and how that, you know, was interfering with democracy. But our democracy has already been interfered with for a long-ass time by fucking Republicans.
Right.
Who legislate these voter suppression laws,
right,
who gerrymander. These things, like, we don't really have free and fair elections,
right,
if there are people who can't vote. Like, that's just,
yeah,
that's just, it's as
end
simple
of sentence
as that.
Well, and it honestly, like, reading that the SIIP is looking to re-enfranchise 50 million people, that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people who aren't able to vote. And again, that can make a really big difference in elections. And it's also just fucking vile.
It's
it's fucking vile.
Yes.
And it's undemocratic. So lots of side rants today.
Seriously.
On yeah.
It must be the eclipse.
It must be the eclipse.
But we will possibly be back on Thursday. Like we said, game day decision, because I will be in Anaheim.
And I still have some headache issues.
Yes.
So we'll let you know either way on Twitter, but thanks for listening to today's pod, and we will hopefully see you on Thursday.
For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HellbentPod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/HellbentPodcast. We also have a fan group called Dickwads Be Gone, which you can find on Facebook.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent.